Blog Talk Radio.
Our destiny is greatness, people. Why?
Because God did it.
Come on with it.
Talk to him.
Hey, Nick and E in the morning.
You know why they yawning, yawning.
You know why they yawning, yawning, yawning.
Talk to him.
Come on, E.
Get them out the way.
Come on.
Hey, God, where about that?
We loosen the movement.
Lethoric.
It's happening. Colossal. Our destiny is greatness.
Talk to him.
Talk
yes, sir.
To him.
Good morning. Woo! That's right, baby. We are back. It is Food We Got Wednesday. And we are ready to go today. What's happening?
I'm feeling good. It is a great day. Who We Got Wednesday. We are here, Nick and Eric, in the morning. I want to thank all you beautiful people for joining us, and I'm ready to do this, bro.
Oh yeah. I think we have a great topic this morning. Okay, we have a great topic, and we also have a great guest. And in lieu of September 11th and the tribute that we paid on Monday, we wanted to stay in line with first responders. We wanted to stay in line with those who sacrifice their lives and put their lives on the line every single day. And maybe we don't appreciate them enough. And maybe the occurrences, the tragedies of late, the shootings to people unjustly, to not just people, but to be more specific, to African American males and even females of our community, with the killing of Sandra Bland, we have given police officers as a whole, whether subconsciously or consciously, we have given them a rep that is tied with negativity, with inequality, with even racism. So today we're excited about our guest, and we're excited about the topic that one is willing to address, because it is not common that you find someone who is willing to address this topic, especially publicly. So, bro, go ahead and ask me the question, because I've been dancing around saying who we got, and I can finally say it, so go ahead and ask me.
Who we got?
I'm glad you asked me, good brother. Listen, today, this morning, on Nick and Eric in the Mornings, Who We Got Wednesday, I'm extremely excited to announce our special guest. Our special guest is a 19-year veteran, the police force. 19 years, okay? She is currently positioned as corporal in the Philadelphia Police Department. She's been a leader of the youth ministry and working with youth, the leader of youth at Triumph Baptist Church for over 16 years. Okay, she's a member in so many different volunteer capacities, and we are excited to have her join us today. Okay, and I've coined her as my aunt. Okay, Nick's aunt. Okay, not Eric's aunt. Nick's aunt. I stole her. Okay, I want to make that clear. And this morning we have with us Corporal Cheryl Walker. Miss Cheryl, how you doing this morning? Hold on now. Hello?
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah, now we can hear you. How you doing this morning?
Hey. I'm good. You? How are you? EK, what's going on?
What's happening? I didn't know if we were. Didn't know if we were using our street names,
I affectionately call you EK. We know what it is.
Officer Cheryl, what's happening? How you feeling? Good to hear from you.
Oh, same here.
Oh yeah. Now we're gonna get right into this. I sent you a question late last night. It was in addition to the questions that I had already originally sent you. Now, is it okay for me to get into that question?
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. I saw it.
Okay. Okay. Good. 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 Now, listen, we're starting right at the top of the show heavy. Okay. Now the first question I'm going to go, E, that I want you to go ahead and knock out your first question. I'll come back and you can go again. The first question I want to ask is, you have a tough task. We don't belittle that here on this show, at least. But one of the questions that many that are awoke, okay, many that are awoke want to know is what it's like to be silent, be part of the silent blue, but also have to stand up and speak up for the oppressed black. So what is it like to wear black and blue at the same time?
Well, first, before I say anything, let me just say, although I am a Philadelphia police officer, the views and opinions I express are solely my own, and they do not represent nor speak Philadelphia Police Department, okay? Well, being black and wearing blue, it can be difficult at times, but it also can be a proud moment. One of the things of being black and being a police officer, it's sad sometimes to see how some of these officers treat not just black people, but people in general. You know, and the media has put out where you see a lot of the things being going on are reference to white officers and black people. But I would just, you know, suggest to you to let you know that it's going on in the Latino community and it's going on in the Asian community. But like I said, the media puts out where you see white and black. And at times it's very hurting. But then again, I'm very proud to wear it because of my sisters and my brothers who stand beside me know that there have been so many people who went before us for us to have this right to stand and say that I'm going to be a Philadelphia police officer. Many people have lost their lives. Many people have been subject to so much humility. And being a black female officer in a white dominant department is also very proud, too, because some of us have not learned how to adjust to a system that's placed basically for men. So I'm proud to say that I'm a corporal in the Philadelphia Police Department. I'm proud because I can set an example to let young women know, young black women know, that they can do it, too.
Yeah. You have to be proud. You have to be proud. And that goes without saying for any job nowadays, because when you speak to what had to take place for us to have the right to do what we do daily, oh, that's across the board, because we know we know where we've come from. And we know where we are now, and that's by the grace of God, but also by the sacrifices of our ancestors and the test of the fortitude to keep pushing on. Great response there. E, I'm getting out the way. Go ahead, good brother.
No. Yeah, that's nice. I thought the inquiry about black and blue was such a poignant one because you're proud of both. And you're so proud of both. Now, I know it's sad sometimes, like you said, to see the way some police officers treat African-Americans. And it's also sad sometimes to see the way the media and the way some African-Americans treat police officers. I occasionally I find myself watching CNN, sadly, and I'll catch a debate, and I caught a debate a while back, and a retired NYPD detective, his name's Harry Huick, I believe it's pronounced. I don't know if you heard of this guy, but he's described as the CNN's resident police brutality apologist. That's what they call him. But he says outlandish things from time to time. Two of the things that he's most attributed to saying on CNN is, number one, that black people are prone to criminality, because a lot of times people say the statistic that, you know, we're pulled over three times more
than our Caucasian counterparts, and we're arrested at a higher rate. And then Harry Hillock says, "Oh well, you guys do more crime though. You're prone to criminality." And he also said on as it relates to the Tamir Rice case, that the police officer who killed Tamir Rice, quote unquote, acted correctly. Now, these are statements that many people disagree with, and you don't have to state your opinion on these claims. However, as you just alluded to, being an African-American female law enforcement officer, do you believe that there are, he may be one of them, but do you believe that there are biased, insensitive, overly impulsive, and maybe even racist members of the police force? And how large or small is that fraction of the force, in your opinion?
Well, biases, yes. Insensitive, yes. Overly impulsive, yes. Racist, yes. I cannot tell you like how large or small the percentage is, but I can tell you this. When you live in an imperfect world with imperfect people who are born and raised under many different religions, beliefs, values, you will have these emotions, feelings, and sentiments. So it does exist.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Well,
yeah, no worries.
I'm with you. I mean, I was waiting for you to say one of those characteristics and say no.
Me too. Yeah.
But you did. But you didn't. You said yes to all of them.
I'm going to be real. It's there.
Yeah.
You know,
some may
play it more than others, and some may just, you know, have it underneath them, but it's there.
Like you said, we
go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say like you just said that this is a very imperfect world, which is why I put my hand over my heart and salute the flag honor the flag and honor the national anthem in our country because of people like you who are sometimes overshadowed by the imperfections of the police force and the imperfect world. Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
You know,
I would also add. Go ahead. I'm sure I'm cutting everybody off. I don't know why.
No, because it's an exciting topic, you know. But you know, when you have people who display these types of things. And people who are willing and wanting to do good, you know, it tarnishes us also. You know, we some of us go around saying these bad cops make the good cops look bad, you know. And it's hard to work out here and try to maintain an image of professionalism, of dedication and service to these people when you have some officers displaying these types of sentiments openly and publicly. It tarnishes our whole badge. Just like when you say, like the man said, black people are prone to criminality. You know, or all blacks sell drugs, or all blacks. That's not the case. Some,
right.
You know, you have to remember, you know, some people. It's not everyone. It's not everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's also a point, and we spoke to this before, and you kind of brought it up when you answered Eric's question. And you mentioned people based on how they're raised, based on the different cultures and religions. And there was a topic that Eric and I brought up and discussed on air. Unconscious bias was the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Eric knows who mentioned this on the air. I got it from Eric. He got it from a reporter.
Van Jones.
But Van Jones. And so. A huge topic, and I think you kind of subconsciously alluded to it yourself. This is really the root of all evil, and not necessarily subconscious, because I would venture to say that is a few of the police who act in the way that they act, and that others intentionally or knowingly or consciously do what they do. But this subconscious bias. You know, just how do we respond to that? And I guess this is a rhetorical question. It's not on the list, and I want to get moving on. But I did want to bring it up again because our listeners, they know we've mentioned this before, and now we have you on the air, 19 years of experience, knowing what you're doing and seeing things around you, and you kind of allude to a past topic that we brought up, which is subconscious bias. So we see similarities here in previous conversations and how we are conversing now. But then secondly, on Monday we talked about September 11th. Okay, we paid respects and homage and really highlighted and all of the first responders, all of those impacted, those heroes from September 11th. And it was amazing. I mean, it was an amazing show, and it was a great opportunity, to be completely honest, because of everything that went on that day, the tragedy, 2,997 victims killed, 400 firefighters and first responders killed in New York City. But then you have people like Mark Lamont Hill, Dr. Mark Lamont Hill, who speaks to this utopia of no policing, and that is to say, at some point, to get to a place where we would never need police officers, where we would be free of the necessity of police officers within our country. And I then ask you the question of what does that look like? What does a world without first responders, with terrorists like Al-Qaeda and other third world countries, what does that look like, one? And two, walk us through the importance of first responders in tragedies, not only like September 11th, but also Philando Castillo, Sandra Bland. How important is first responders in those areas, and how do we balance the two?
Well, let's even look back and let's just take Moses, for example, of him being a leader. And when he went up to the mountain, how people start when he was going for the many years, how the people didn't have a leader or quote unquote a person of authority, how they just started acting all, you know, crazy and building idols, doing what they weren't supposed to do. So, you know, their leader was not there, their person of authority, the person who upheld laws and things like, they were not there. So then their little, you know, they became disarray, they became disobedient, and they started doing things that they shouldn't have done. And then, you know, now they have to face the consequences of what happened. But what I'm saying is, if you don't have first responders or anyone of that upholds the law, you're going to have chaos. Until we as a world, as a human race, can come together in love and respect from one another, we're not going to be able to do that, because people need guidance. Rules are set in place, laws are set in place for people to guide them. It's to guide them. It's not to, I don't believe they're in place to overrule someone, it's to guide society. And even God himself instilled rules and laws to follow so it could be a good nation. But people have not done that. They have not done that. So now we have this turmoil. And I don't see a world without policing, because some of us can't even police ourselves. So, you know, I don't think it's... My thing is, and even me, if I wanted to pick up the phone and call 911 because I needed help, I would want someone to come. No matter what your point is or how you feel, if it's your loved one or your family member, you picking up the phone and you're calling for help. You want someone to respond. I don't, you know, even if you don't appreciate the police officers, if something was to terribly happen and, God forbid, to you or a family member, you're going to pick up the phone and call 911 because you want someone to come and respond and help. You know, we wake up every day, We wake up daily, and we don't say we're going to go out, and when I say we, I'm talking about the police officers, that, oh, I'm going to kill someone today. You know, I'm going to kill a black man today, or I'm going to not do my job in an effective manner. We wake up saying, you know what, we're going out here to do a job. You know, and on our way to a job, we could get into an auto accident. We're trying to do a job. We might take a fall chasing a bad guy, you know, and be crippled for the rest of our lives. You know, we may get hit by a car from just standing on the street and directing traffic. You know, it's a lot that goes on as first responders. We don't think about those things. We think about going. When those gunshots calls come out for gunshots, we're not hesitant. We're going right there, not knowing if we're going to make it home.
Wow.
You know, when people run from situations, we run to the situation. We don't think about our loved ones that we just left and said, bye, granddaughter, I'll see you later, or bye, son, I'll see you later, or bye, wife or husband or whatever, I'll see you later. When they have fires, sometimes the fire department's not the first one on the scene. You got police officers kicking in the door, trying to get into the home to save someone. First responders. And, you know, we don't think about that. And I'll just tell you a little bit about what happened to me when I was working in the 24th District. I went, and some of you know may know the story, some of you may not, but I went to work just saying, you know, Lord, let it be a good day. And a call came out for a woman having a heart attack on the highway. I'm the first responder. I got the call. So I'm driving down the street, remembering the chest compressions. Do I have my mask? Because I want to go save this woman. That's what my first responder instinct said. But in the course of responding, I was driving a vehicle that was mechanical, means the window was stuck down, and this woman dove in my car while I was driving. And she began to punch and kick me and pull my gun and tell me that she was going to kill me. And the whole while she's in this car punching and kicking me, pulling my gun, telling me she's going to kill me, my car is in drive. I did all I had to do or what I was trained to do or what I thought I needed to do to survive. And, you know, the woman, I finally got the car in park or whatnot, but that same woman I was supposed to go save was the same woman that jumped in my car.
Wow.
So when we say first responders, you know, I'm like, okay, let me just go. I'm not thinking somebody's going to jump in my car or someone's going to shoot at me. Or, you know, I'm going to say I'm going out here to do my job because they called me to do it. So if we want to look at a world where there's no policing, you know, it kind of reminds me of that movie, The Purge. I would be frightened. Honestly,
yeah.
I would.
Yeah. But, hey, I think she just answered this question, bro. This last question.
Man, look here. That was that was rich. That was extremely rich. And that's what we wanted. That's exactly what we wanted. We wanted an insider's view on that split decision that is selfless and doesn't think about one family or, you know, the entire situation. The training kicks in. Now, like, I don't need to know what happened to that woman that jumped in your car, but the reality is that people need to understand the split-second decision that one has to make between shooting to kill and protecting their own life. Because they have a family to get home to, they have a life to go back to after this altercation. And listen, Sheryl, maybe you can speak to this. Listen, we don't really understand the rules and the laws around shooting a civilian, right, or mm-hmm. criminal, or however you want to put it, whether innocent or not innocent, right? You know, whether innocent or guilty. We don't know the laws around shooting a civilian. But we do know that officers, or at least we think, officers are trained to shoot to kill. My question is, one, why is that? And two, how do we balance shooting to kill between shooting to enable a threat? Because to me, if you shoot to kill, now this person doesn't get the help that they need, whether it be rehabilitation, whether it be jail time, whatever it is, mental health, stability, whatever that is. Can you walk us through the training around shoot to kill and even the situations and when it's appropriate?
Well, when I went to the police academy in 10/6/1997, the training I had was 6 months. I never was trained to shoot to kill. I was trained to shoot or to stop the threat. Like you said, I was trained to stop the threat. I was not trained to kill. I was trained to stop the threat. So you, like you said, we talk about decisions. We talk about, we have to talk, also talk about choices that we make. You know, some of these situations that have occurred are based on choices that we have made. And whatever the consequences are, they are, you know, and a lot of the consequences have not been good for the police officer and the person they encountered. And I'll just, you know, take one example of the young man that was, they were called out because the guy supposed to have a gun, and he did have a gun, and he was selling CDs. Unfortunately, that man is no longer here.
Yeah.
We 911 call. 911 got a call. A person with a gun. We respond. We already know that there's possibly a gun involved. When you look at society and the things we have been through, some of us have been through as officers, some of us have been faced with a gun in our face. Some of us have been beaten. Some of us have been kicked. Some of us have been ran over. You know, and then we look at our officers who are gone, like Sergeant Wilson, who went into the store to buy a game for his son, and he gets ambushed. The Baird, who went into the bank just to sign a log, and she gets ambushed and killed. Or the officers that were driving, responding to a job, their car gets hit, and no longer is Officer Nazario around because she dies in the car accident. All those things come into play when we answer a call. Emotions, feelings, our adrenaline is running, and even fear, because we don't know what we're going into. We're going into the unknown. We have what information we have based on 911, and sometimes all that information isn't correct. You have people who make false calls to get you somewhere so they can just do something to you. We had, you know, we respond to houses that have booby traps. You're walking up and down the steps, and you walk across a carpet, which is a hole, and your officers are falling through the floor. You know, so all these things come into play. The longer you're on the job, the more experience you have, the more things you see, the more things you hear. So all that comes into play when you're going to go respond to a job. Now, I don't want to see anyone get shot. Not when that woman jumped in my car, I didn't want to shoot her. You know, but if I had to, I would have. But after, even if that would occur, and these officers that have killed people, guarantee you me, their mind is not resting well. And they're probably saying they could have handled it a different way, or we should have handled it a different way. We're not trained, and again, I wasn't trained to kill. I was trained to stop the threat. And even if I lose my gun, then I'm going to go back to my South Philadelphia street fighting, and I'm going to do what I have to do to make sure that I go home. And unfortunately, sometimes things happen that we don't wish to happen. And, you know, we're getting calls to these places, to these people, and it just so happens that they're African-American or they're Latino, or, you know, it's sad that it's being depicted like, and it is true that some of the injustice, there is injustice, now I will say that, in the Philadelphia Police Department and the police in general and in our race, and it's being brought to light. And I can appreciate those people that are bringing it to light, but my thing is, once you bring it to light, what are you doing to help?
Exactly.
I had a bad experience when I was younger. When I was younger, I got arrested. And I was placed in handcuffs because I was trying to break up a fight. And they locked me up, and I was a teenager, 15. Put me in the back of the police wagon and said, "You little black." And I did word, right?
Right.
So
right.
I experienced the police department in a negative way. But I didn't let that bitter me. I said, you know what? When I grow up, I'm going to be a police officer so I can make a difference. And that's what I've done. So when people encounter Corporal Walker, they encounter a different type of policing. You know, these officers are overworked. they respond and they're counselors, they're the water department, they're doctors, we're everything. When people call for service, they call 911. You would be surprised on how many calls we get and different types of calls we get. But all that is in their mind when they're responding. You don't know what's going to happen. And like you said, Nick, your training does kick in. But so when you feel as though you're threatened, is the question is, do they live and I die, or do I die and they live?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, one of my best friends, Gregory Neal, who's a police officer, and we went to the Dominican Republic in April, and we went with his cousin, who was transferred to Atlanta, who was also a police officer in Philadelphia. And, you know, we're sitting by the pool, and I'm telling stories about dealing with hecklers at a comedy show, and they're telling stories about dead bodies, about seeing things that I can't see myself dealing with. And
right.
at the end of the day, you see things that many of us can only ever imagine, and you know things that most of us cannot begin to comprehend. And this is a tumultuous climate of police brutality and riots and sitting through the national anthem, and some of these things that you're saying are things that people need to hear, because there's a misconception and there's an oversight and there's an underappreciation that I think is just as bad as any other misconception that people may have about black people or that people may have about any group, because the police officers are a group and they are one of the most important groups. So, you know, I work at an elementary school, and I love to see some days when a police officer would just randomly show up at recess and some kids will crowd around them. I love the image of a police officer as a hero, because if we're going to be honest, that's what they are. And I love the way you said when I call 911, I want them to answer. I mean, who else do you know for sure in this world? Who else can you bet on that's going to answer and be there right away? No questions asked. We need police officers. And we need police officers like you, and I'm glad we have them.
Right. Well, I'm glad to be of service. You know, even me working here, like I told the scene, and many people at Triad Baptist Church know, someone came to the window and said someone down the street is having a heart attack. I didn't hesitate once to grab the AED, run a block with equipment on and carrying that machine to help this man that I didn't even know. You know, and we end up saving his life. We end up saving his life. If it wasn't for me running down there with the AED and the other officers giving chest compressions and mouth to mouth to someone they don't know, the man would not be alive.
Well, listen. We have extended our time here, but we have done it in fine fashion, and we've done it with great content and experience.
that
has been delineated by Corporal Walker from the Philadelphia Police Department. Okay, we are excited about what we've been able to address, what we've been able to answer today. If you guys have any more questions, shoot them to me. I'll shoot them to her if they're appropriate, and we'll get you an answer. But listen, Corporal Walker, we are grateful for your questioning, for your answering this morning, for your presence. We are excited about what we were able to do, and we just want to thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, you guys are welcome. I'm so proud of you both. Y'all know I ain't going to start crying, so I'm going to go on back to work. Y'all know I'm a cry baby. But I love you guys. You guys keep doing what you're doing. You know, people like you and Eric and Nick and Marquise Coates and, you know, the Danny Suttons and, you know, the people, Isaiah Thomases, those people that are trying to, that's what I'm talking about. Let's take care of our community. Let's take care of each other. Let's help each other. So, and let's stand up for each other. We have to stand together to get this done.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, listen, you heard it here first. We've got the answers. You got the time. We got the rhymes. And we'll give them to you this morning.
Oh, my goodness.
So, listen, we're getting out of here. If you didn't get anything from this show, please remember this. Remember that our destiny, my destiny, his destiny, Corporal Walker's destiny, all of our destiny is greatness. And it's not because of you. It's not because of me. It's not because of Eve. Our destiny is greatness. Why, brother? Come on, Eve.
Because God did it.
That's right. Our destiny is greatness because God did it. I holla at you. Y'all be easy. Have a great week. I'll talk to you on Motivational Monday. Peace.
Amen.